On today's episode of Let's Locums.
That's how I found my Alaska job, Montana, and my South Carolina job was literally just messaging them. And even if they could be listed as a locum position or they could be listed as a perm position. And so my thought process is if they're looking for a permanent doctor, they might be open to an interim until they find that permanent person.
Welcome to Let's Locums, the podcast hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer, ENT surgeons and the founders of SpecialtyLocums.com. Join us as we explore the world of locum tenens and help you navigate the options for a flexible and rewarding medical career. Welcome to Let's Locums. This is Dr. Mark Royer. I'm an ear, nose, and throat surgeon and locum tenens physician. And here today, we have a special guest. Dr. Genevieve Jacobs is a full-time locum tenens physician specializing in physical medicine and rehabilitation. She completed her undergraduate and medical degrees at Virginia Tech before pursuing residency training in Louisville, Kentucky. Passionate about travel medicine, Dr. Jacobs launched her website to educate fellow clinicians about this exciting career choice and recently released an online course outlining what it takes to get started in the locum space. Dr. Jacobs, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited to talk to you. Allie and I have been followers of your Instagram account now for quite some time and was absolutely thrilled when you accepted our invitation to come on. First, though, before we dive into your social media, would love to hear about how you came into medicine, how you chose PM&R as a career, and bring us up to speed a little bit on your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you again for having me on the show. And I love that you've followed my little locum story on Instagram, my kind of pet project. But PM&R, physical medicine rehab, is kind of a non-traditional specialty. And I guess it makes sense that I got into it in a non-traditional manner. So I actually was interested in research when I left undergrad. So I was working at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda doing brain injury research. And I was there for about 3 years as a post-bac fellow. And it was there that I actually started meeting my first physicians that were doing research and learning more about the clinical medicine side rather than the research side. And it was actually through brain injury, this brain injury clinical trial that I met my first physiatrist or PM&R physician. And she was amazing. I didn't know that this specialty existed. And then once I understood more about what she was doing, I thought maybe I need to go to medical school instead of get a PhD. So I was actually on the research track when I diverted and went to a clinical track, which I'm much happier doing clinical medicine than like rat brains and pipetting in the lab. I mean, that's all fun, but talking to people is a lot more entertaining and interesting than being in a lab. So that's how I got into the PM&R side, was actually through brain injury medicine, and then ended up in Louisville, Kentucky, because there was a premier residency training program here that specialized in brain and spinal cord injuries.
How long is the residency program for PM&R?
It's 4 years total. The first year is an internal medicine, like intern year, and then the final three are all rehab specific.
When you finished up, did you start out in a traditional practice or did you jump right into locums?
I went straight into locums. So I've always had an interest in traveling. My parents lived all over the world. I've been traveling since I was young. And when I first learned about locum work, I thought, someone's going to pay me to travel to be a doctor. Like, let me do that. So I've always had an interest. And it's funny, I'm sure you had a similar experience. Like when you first asked people about like locum tenens, like, what are your thoughts? I had some of my attendings or some of the older administrators kind of be like, oh, well, locum tenens is kind of for people that don't have a solid job or can't stay in a specific field. And I was like, yeah, I was hearing what they were saying, but also in the back of my head, I'm like, but they're going to cool places and traveling and doing all these really interesting things. So I decided to ignore what they were saying.
And it's a common misperception for sure.
And definitely. And,
People so, like you are helping to change that, right? So
yeah,
it's great.
And that's really a lot of what I love doing, is changing that perception that it's physicians that are in it because they can't do a regular job, or there's so much excitement in the locum world that that's really what I am attracted to. I graduated in 2020. It was the COVID nightmare, everything. And I was like, I don't want to take on another 3-year contract, 5-year contract. I want to just get my feet wet and see what's out there. So I jumped straight into locum from residency.
A couple of things that really stand out with your Instagram, Locum Lady. Allie and I were talking, and a couple of things that were really impressive. Number one, she's particularly impressed by how organized you seem with everything. I mean, you're packing your itineraries, the details. What are some strategies that you use for your organization system, or any advice you can give on that?
Which is funny because I'm not usually a very organized person, but I had to be once I started doing locum work, because just trying to track your medical licenses, your DEAs, your applications, I was just all over the place. So I do an Excel spreadsheet. I also have, this is a little bit overkill for kind of like the run of the mill locum physician or practitioner, but I have a back page to my website where it has all of my credentials that I can send to locum agencies or hospitals to download all of my stuff. So I don't have to send them emails with all my info. It's an encrypted back end to my website. I give them a password and then they can figure out what they want of my information. That's been really helpful. And it was pretty easy. I mean, I just use Squarespace as my website. And then I use Excel sheets and Google folders to keep everything straight. But I have an extensive Google Drive for all this stuff.
The other thing that we're really impressed by is your commitment to pay equity and your transparency with what you get paid. And especially, you know, us being married and in the same specialty, seeing that even in our specialty of ENT, there's pay gap between men and women. And I think that what your transparency there really helps level that playing field.
Absolutely. I really struggled with that when I first started. I'm grateful because I had a lot of mentors when I was starting out that were willing to tell me their rates, like what should a starting rate be so that I wouldn't get, you know, ripped off on my first job or whatever. And I made sure to ask both male and female practitioners because I've always been paranoid that as a female physician, I'm going to get paid less. And I didn't want that to happen. So I figured I could pay it back by being transparent about my pay, even though it's a little, you know, like a taboo subject. And my mom hates that I talk about how much I make on the internet. She's like, I taught you better than that. And I tell her, Mom, it's for transparency. So other physicians, especially female physicians, are getting the best deal because it's a business at the end of the day, healthcare.
Yeah, and it is a huge service you're providing to your colleagues, all of us out there. So we certainly appreciate you doing that. You also have this great perspective on locums practice versus traditional practice that comes out there. And then of course, you know, we as a family, we love traveling as well. Your enthusiasm for not only locums, but also the travel component of that really comes through.
It really creates more opportunities for me to do other types of travel. My husband and I just did a 2-week road trip from my last assignment in Anchorage, Alaska to San Diego. We bought an RV over the summer and we decided that I did a month of rehab work at a locum assignment in Anchorage. And then we decided to take 2 weeks to get down to California for our national conference, where I actually gave a speech on locum tenens work. And we stopped at all the national parks we could find, had these crazy adventures. I mean, we're in the Yukon at -3 degrees in a snow blizzard, crazy stuff. But it gives you so many opportunities to have the time off to travel and do other kind of leisure activities.
You drive to some of your assignments, correct?
Yes. Sometimes I'll drive. A lot of times I will fly. So in this scenario, I flew to Anchorage. My husband drove, picked me up in Alaska, and then we drove back. Great. In some jobs, I've driven 5 or 6 hours. I'll do a variety. A lot of times it has to do with the dog, if I can bring the dog or not. I like to bring her if I can, and then we'll drive because she is not a good flyer.
When you show up in an assignment, are you staying then usually in an Airbnb, or are you ever staying in the RV, or do you think you might in the future, or do you always request Airbnbs?
I've always requested Airbnbs. In the very beginning, when I kind of wasn't sure what I was doing, I would do the hotel thing. But after a few weeks, that gets really old. And especially if you're working over holidays, it's just like depressing to come home and not have like a kitchen or dryer, washing machine situation. So now I request Airbnb, and 99.9% of the time, the assignments are fine with that. So I haven't had any problems.
Is there a certain length of assignment you like to work that you find is like the sweet spot? And is it like a week at a time, 2 weeks at a time, longer, shorter?
Yes, I have figured out when I turn into a pumpkin, and it's usually after like 3 weeks of back-to-back work. I'm like, okay, I need a break. I need to go home and relax and have my routine. So usually 2 to 3 weeks is when I'm needing a break. I've done 6 weeks. That was not great, not pleasant. I did 33 days straight with 2 days off over the summer, and I made great money, but I was tired after that. So I just make sure I'm taking ample time off if I'm going to do big stretches like that. And a lot of times it's scenarios where the hospital is super desperate, or it's just like a really crummy situation for them. And I'm like, okay, I'll just stay because they have no other options. But it's not ideal. The shortest one I've ever done was like 5 days. So there's a huge range.
How about from the time off side of it? Do you have a sweet spot for that? And then if it's longer, do you find yourself really dreading going back, or are you kind of more excited and looking forward to getting back to work?
I'm probably in that phase right now. So I've been off for about 3 weeks, and I work a job for Christmas just for a week. And then I take my next longer assignment at the end of January. So I think 3 weeks is a good amount, 2 or 3 weeks is a good amount of time to have off to recharge. And then I'm ready to go back to work. I like the social aspect of, you know, seeing other people, interacting with patients, whatever. But usually I can do all the things I want to do in those 2 or 3 weeks, and then I'm recharged and ready to go back.
This is like such a fascinating thing to see in action, right? I think a lot of docs are tied up in like an employment situation, and it's probably like what they're dreaming of at night. And
yes.
So I think one barrier to docs taking the leap into this is there's concern that these are essentially gig jobs. And when you have an employment contract, usually that's 3 years, 5 years, there's some sense of security. Now, it may be a false sense of security, but still on paper, I have this job for 3 years, for 5 years. In your situation, you're taking these positions for hospitals that need that. And now I'm sure you have a robust many facilities that know about you, know the quality of care you provide. So there's always work for you. But when you kind of first got started, did that enter your mind? Was that a concern? You know, am I going to go work here 3 weeks and then there'll be not work available?
It's definitely a very common concern for people that are going into locum work. And there are physicians that must have their schedule lined up, next job, because they have certain things that they have to pay for or, you know, take care of. I don't necessarily have that issue. So I feel a lot, I'm very lucky in the sense that I feel like I can take as much time off as I want. And when it's like bank accounts dwindling a little bit, I can pick up some shifts. I also was doing PRN urgent care back in my home state. So when I was at home and I needed some extra funds, if I didn't want to get on a plane and go do it, you know, to another job, I would just do urgent care that paid pretty well. I have since transitioned from that job, so I'm strictly doing locum stuff. So yes, it is definitely a fear. You have to have good money management skills, have your savings set up. My husband isn't working right now. He's in the Army, so he just transitioned out of an assignment in Germany. We're currently working off of my one income, so I'm cognizant of that. And then, you know, if funds start running low, then I can message my resources and say, do you need assistance or coverage? But it is definitely, I'm not going to pretend that it's not a concern. It's definitely a concern, but I was more afraid of being locked into a 3-year, 5-year contract where I was miserable than I was, you know, not having that specific backup. I mean, it took me, because I graduated in the height of COVID, it took me a solid 6 or 7 months before I got my first post-residency job. And that was super nerve-wracking. I was just like, what am I doing? I'm an unemployed physician. How is this possible? I was really thinking that I was going to have to like cave and take a permanent job. But then I held out and finally got my first gig, I was like, okay, this is what I need to be doing. But yes, it is certainly a concern.
I want to ask you about your direct contracting. Yeah, I just saw a post from you recently about that, which I thought was really fascinating. Do some direct contracting. Mm-hmm. When I have docs reach out to me, we have started what we've started mostly as, you know, we started it as a service to docs to try and help them make more money, have more personalized service, make sure their jobs are really solid. I still always tell them if they can direct contract with a hospital, that is what I recommend. Mm-hmm. The downside to that, there's two. One is oftentimes hospitals like this independent contractor, but with a middleman in between status. They love to have a middleman there.
Yeah.
There are advantages to a hospital for that. The other issue is malpractice insurance, because often that doesn't transfer from site to site, or certainly not across state lines most of the time. Mm-hmm. So with your direct contracting specifically, I'd love to hear how you develop those relationships with these hospitals and then what you do for malpractice insurance.
Yeah. And I think that those are all great topics. And it is kind of odd how, in speaking to different facilities, hospitals do like to have like the security blanket of a locum tenens agency so they can help with credentialing and travel and all this other stuff, and they don't have to deal with so much of that. And I also, something that surprised me in doing direct contracting, I thought the pay would be so much better doing direct contracting, at least for rehab for my specialty. I've not found that to be the case. It's not like I'm getting triple the amount than I would with an agency. They're pretty comparable in terms of their rates. And I've been kind of puzzled by that, but from what I've gathered in talking to a lot of administrators and executives over the years is that there's certain amounts of money that are set aside for locum agency contracts that is, you can pay a physician that's a different bucket essentially than what you can pay a physician if they're direct contracting. So that's kind of the excuse, I would say, or like the reasoning that I've gotten behind some of those monies not being allocated for direct contracts, is that it's a different spending pool that they can use for agencies. I have found a lot of my direct contracts through job postings that I just message directly. So I like using New England Journal of Medicine. That's my favorite place to find a job. They have a career center, and then you can just say your specialty, whether you want a locum, remote, permanent job, and it'll give you kind of like an unbiased list. It'll give you locum agency listed positions, but it will also give you the hospital directly that's hiring that position.
And so you'll search that, find a site, a hospital directly that needs somebody, and then you'll send them an email or CV or apply and say, hey, I don't want to be your full-time employed doctor, but you know, here's what I do. And do you have kind of dates that you would need? Is that typically how it works?
Yeah, okay, exactly. Great. And that's how I found my Alaska job, Montana, and my South Carolina job, was literally just messaging them. And even if they could be listed as a locum position or they could be listed as a perm position. And so my thought process is, if they're looking for a permanent doctor, they might be open to an interim until they find that permanent person. So that's how I kind of pitch myself to them. And it's sometimes it works. Sometimes they're like, no, thanks. We want to do an agency, or we want only a permanent physician, et cetera. But it's worked out the times it has been successful.
Seems like it's worked out pretty well, because you said that did you say that's definitely the majority of the jobs you're working now are just direct contracting?
Yes, yeah.
And then what do you do for malpractice insurance?
Actually, those hospitals provide malpractice each time I go there. So I just make sure that I have a rock solid policy, that I'm reviewing the policy that they have in place, making sure there's tail coverage, you know, all those good things, and having a copy, you know, of everything in my fancy Google Drive. But it's sort of just been part of the hiring experience. They're like, okay, this is the insurance we do. So I've never had to get separate private malpractice in any of this process.
Are you typically working at larger hospitals or smaller hospitals?
There's certainly a lot of small towns, but I've worked in some bigger ones. So in terms of rehab facilities, I trained at an 80-bed rehab hospital. That's huge. That's pretty big. I probably worked at a 60-bed unit, 40-bed, and then I worked at some tiny units that were 10 beds. So my max census is going to be 10 to 15 patients. In those scenarios, a lot of leverage I use is if they need someone last minute, like there was an emergency or the, you know, some kind of family issue happened with the provider. If I'm already licensed there, I can get there really quickly. So like I had someone that needed coverage starting on a Monday and they contacted me on a Thursday. I was like, well, luckily I'm licensed in this state already and have a DEA. You just have to give me a credential at your facility and I will get myself there. And so because I had that leverage, I could negotiate a higher rate for last minute assignment.
That's one thing I've noticed you've mentioned on Instagram is the shift incentives. How does that work? And when do you negotiate those?
Well, you know, I first heard about shift incentives from a locum ER physician, and he was getting like crazy amounts to do last minute shifts. I'm like, no one's ever offered me a shift incentive. So I kind of like reverse engineered that and started using that like terminology with some of my agents or when I'm booking jobs. I might not say specifically to them, okay, I want a shift, you know, bonus or differential for this, whatever, But in proposing, you know, that I'm saving them money by X, Y, and Z reasons, I can afford my rate to be a little bit higher, or they can afford for my rate to be a little bit higher. But I'm hoping to make that something that's more common in the locum world, that these shift differentials or the incentives that people are talking about, like for holidays or last minute coverage, that that becomes more normalized, because a lot of times physicians are taking shifts or jobs with no incentive because they haven't thought to ask for them.
It's a great thing to be bringing into our vernacular and our kind of thought process when we're trying to determine our values. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think then you having your organization to have all your stuff available for this kind of emergency credentialing, and then having your license and DEA is kind of this repertoire build up, just makes that probably easier and easier to do when there are sites that desperately need you. So excellent.
Yes, absolutely.
Can you describe some of the most memorable locations or assignments that you've had since you've been doing this?
Alaska for sure is at the very top, because there's just such crazy wildlife there. Like, I saw my first moose. They have bears. You know, you're hiking these incredible mountains on your time off. There's just so much to do and so much to see. I am working on getting my pilot's license just for fun. And so I try to take flight lessons in whatever city I'm locuming in. And Alaska was just incredible to see it by air. And it's just like, I felt like I was on Mars. I felt like I was in a whole nother planet. I had never been to Alaska before, but it was just such an eclectic, majestic place. And I spent most of the winter there last winter, and it was just wild. There's just so much to do and so much to see.
What advice would you give to someone who's trying to balance locums work with their personal life, especially with regards to like the frequent travel?
It is not easy. It is definitely not easy. I'm a social butterfly, so I like having interaction with other people, but I'm also an introvert. So I'm like the extroverted introvert person or whatever. So I have to put in a lot of effort to put myself out there when I go to new places, like try hiking groups or get on like women's Facebook groups or like book clubs, or try things like that I've never done before. I was in Anchorage last fall and I did like an Irish dance class, and I met two other physicians doing this random class, but I'm not an Irish dance enthusiast, but I was just wanting to try something to, you know, meet people and get out there. And it's hard to keep like your regular life at home. I have a house here in Kentucky, and obviously you have friends and family here. So you do have to put in an effort to keep in touch with them, but they love calling and saying, okay, where are you now? Like, where are you on the map?
From a logistical standpoint, is two of the other kind of barriers that I've heard mentioned are retirement, like saving and planning for retirement. You know, a lot of times employers have sponsored retirement plans, and the other one is health insurance. So I'm curious to know what you do for those two items.
So with my LLC, I have a self-employment 1K. So I'm contributing to my own 1K and then matching it as an employer. So you can match as an employee and employer. That's one way to do it. If you have an LLC, there's also like a lot of different IRAs or Roth IRAs that you can get involved with. Some of the jobs that I take, they're still W-2, and they allow you to contribute to a 401k. So it's not completely.
Oh, really? Some of your direct contracting?
Yeah.
Ones?
It's not completely off the table. And you know, there's this weird line between per diem and PRN and locum tenens work. It's all kind of, in my mind, similar in this sense that there's someone that's hiring you and you tell them what days you can come. If it's one day a week or 6 weeks straight, that's still your employer. And if it's a W-2, then you can have those specific 401k benefits. Mm-hmm. Now, there's usually no other benefits like healthcare or whatever. And I'm kind of cheating on the healthcare one because my husband's in the military, so we get TRICARE. But a lot of my friends that do locum work that aren't in the military, they just go through state programs or have to do private insurance, which is a bummer because we know how expensive that is. But those are the other options.
We have a whole episode coming up on the health insurance side. I was just curious to hear how you did it. So that's great.
And I'm not like a tax expert by any means, but in the near future, I want to become an S corp so that there are even more tax breaks and advantages. I don't know that I can speak to all of those, you know, nuances because that's just not really my area, but getting a good CPA is important to help navigate all that with you.
What I'd like to talk about now is your website and your online course. I know you have a website. It has some great content on there. And then you've also started an online course for clinicians who are interested in traveling locum tenens work. So I'm curious to know what motivated you to create your website and your online course for clinicians who are interested in locum tenens work.
Yeah, I really got into it because I started asking myself, what things did I wish I knew when I was starting out? And so I wanted to kind of have a central space where I could put blog posts up or links or videos or whatever to help others that are interested into getting into that work. Because I had so many questions when I was starting out, and I just wanted a central place to hopefully answer some questions for other people that are thinking about it. And then along the way, I decided, well, if I'm going to be talking about the same topic, I could just make videos about it. That turned into, I'll just make a course about it. And I was actually in Europe. My husband was still in Germany, and we were doing a road trip with his family. So I stopped and recorded each module at a different location just for fun. Just to like
in Europe. So they're on site videos in Europe.
Yes. Like one is in Switzerland with like a waterfall in the back. The lighting's terrible, but I got the waterfall just to kind of also highlight that there's so much you can do when you're not working, and it allows you to be so flexible and have time with your family and explore the world, which is what it's all about anyway.
And can you give us a preview of what we could expect from your course besides the awesome waterfalls in the background?
Waterfalls, cool locations. It really talks about the basics, like the basic overviews, like how do you find a locum job, doing an LLC. We talk about how you get health insurance and those kind of obstacles, malpractice insurance. I talk about how to figure out what comes with a good locum agency, and also how to find a good locum agent for your specialty. I talk about New England Journal of Medicine, how to find jobs there, how I pitch myself to different places, and then kind of like etiquette while you're on the road, how to, you know, present yourself when you're on an assignment, how to be a good brand ambassador to yourself and your specialty and locums in general. And then some practical things like what to pack, because I packed the huge suitcases with a bunch of stuff I didn't need. And now I'm down to my carry-on usually.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, that first impression I think is important.
Yeah.
It's intimidating when you're going to a new place. They don't know you. You don't know them.
Yeah.
And it sounds like some great content. How do you see locum tenens evolving in the next few years? And what role do you hope your resources will provide? And what role will they play?
I'm really hoping to show the side of locum tenens that is fun and adventurous and pushes you outside of your box, not only from a personal standpoint, but professionally. I mean, I've learned so much about myself doing a lot of these assignments on my own. And then also my clinical skills have developed widely, because when you go to a different place and you learn and share knowledge with other people, you're learning about techniques you never would have thought of or never heard of. And then I might be sharing techniques or interventions that they've never heard of. So there's a lot of really cool learning that happens. And so I want to encourage people to think about it from that standpoint. Like, you're expanding your skill set, you're expanding your mind, and you're putting yourself in a maybe uncomfortable situation, but that's where a lot of growth happens, both personally and professionally, in my opinion. And you get to travel and see amazing parts of the world you'd never see otherwise.
Are there any misconceptions about locum tenens that you'd like to clear up?
Definitely. And, you know, I think this comes also from when you ask other people or you ask around, it's like, locum's okay. I mean, and I get the bias, even when I go to different assignments or locations, people are like, well, you know, that was the locum doctor, no offense. And I'm like, none taken. I'm hoping to rewrite, you know, the perception of locum physicians. And that is that they're just there to make the money and leave. They're not invested. But I love being on the rehab unit. I love my specialty, and, you know, being an advocate, not only for yourself, but your medical specialty and medicine in general, I think is a great way to show people that we're not just there to make money and head out. No, we're there to do a good job and be a good example for the rest of the community.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think that you touched on that a little bit earlier when you were talking about, when you were talking to your mentors in residency and you were considering doing this, you know, I get paid to travel, get paid to see the country. Yeah. and work that you're getting a little bit of pushback. That has been the thought in a lot of people's minds until recently, really, that you do that if you can't, you know, if you have a time getting credentialed anywhere or licensed anywhere, right. But
if you have like personality problems or you can't
Don't get along with anybody.
Yeah, you can't play well with others. Now, don't get me wrong. There are certainly locum doctors that fall in that category, just like permanent doctors are the same. But I am trying to change that narrative, especially for younger physicians just getting into the attending field who maybe don't know what they want and want to test a few things out. This is a cool way to try, you know, before you buy and see what's out there. When and if I ever take a permanent job, I know exactly what I'm looking for in that permanent position because I've seen so many different practices and how they've operated. So that is going to be really valuable when that time comes.
How do you recommend clinicians evaluate whether they think locum tenens would be a right fit for them?
You just try it. You know, my first job I did was 5 days, 1 week. If it's terrible, you're only there for 5 days. I mean, we did med school, residency, fellowships, whatever. We sustained and survived all of those things for years at a time. If you want to just give it a shot, you just have to agree to 1 or 2 weeks and then see how it goes. So I really encourage people to do a lot of research and then just, you know, you just got to go. You just got to try to fly.
What would be a piece of advice or wisdom that you would say is critical for someone who is going to try their first shift?
My biggest advice would be you have to be very, very flexible. Locums isn't great for someone that is very, very regimented, that has to have very specific routines, as very rigid in their thinking. You do have to be really flexible and roll with a lot of punches. You have to be pretty open to things that go wrong. I mean, I've been stuck in Denver at 3 a.m. because I missed a transfer, and you can't, you know, that's just like life being a locum doctor. You can't get bent out of shape about it. And even though you want to call someone and be mad, there's nothing you can do. And that's just part of the lifestyle. So you do have to be pretty flexible and roll with punches.
You have your shifts when you're working, and you have then your time off where you're traveling, spending time with family and friends. I'm curious to know, how much time do you spend as an influencer, like making content, doing Instagram, and what other social media channels are you on besides Instagram?
So I started my Instagram January of this year. So it's pretty brand new. Usually when I have downtime or I'm on my off weeks, I have more time to dedicate to social media. So that's when I'll kind of do, you know, post or fun stuff, or if I find something funny that I want to post about. I have a TikTok. I, in the beginning, had made YouTube videos because I thought, I'll just do everything on YouTube. But people are less on YouTube, I've noticed, than they are on Instagram. So then I kind of transitioned more to that. But it's really just if I get an idea or a thought, or I see something funny or something I want to jump on. I get a lot of my content, though, while I'm actually on assignment, because something will happen. I'll be like, oh, I bet people are going to want to know about this. Or see like the real life of like what happens on a day to day, or, you know, like what the pay is or the rate or whatever. So I get a lot of my, you know, inspiration from the actual assignment. And then when I have time off is when I try to put it together.
Well, we love it. Keep it coming. What, really curious to know, what is next for you in your locum's career, your career role as an educator and an influencer? Where do you see yourself going from here?
You know, I'm not sure. I think one of the fun parts of having a small business and doing this and mentorship is like opportunities come up all the time. So I'm really just going with the flow. I've had a few agencies that will reach out to me and ask me to speak to their agents about sort of what physicians are looking for, what physicians want in a locum agency or agent. And I really loved being able to help those agents learn what physicians or practitioners are thinking so that we can have a better experience and they can have a better experience. Because at the end, I just want to be a good liaison ambassador between the physician world and the locum world so that everyone's getting something out of it. Because I think it can be a really rewarding field for, you know, in the right circumstances, and just trying to bridge that gap a little bit has been a fun part for me. So I've done some speaking engagements through that, which I've really liked. And then just mentoring other people and answering questions and getting people excited to try something adventurous. Yesterday, I booked another Montana job, another week in Montana. I'll be back in Alaska at the end of the spring. Hawaii is on my list. That's like my wish list. So I think that's on everyone's wish list. But one day I'm going to get a locum job in Hawaii. That's my goal.
Well, I'm going to put our people on it.
Might as well
pitch to you. That would be very cool. Although I think Alaska sounds pretty great from what you've been talking about.
Yeah, direct
sounds pretty
flights
amazing.
From Alaska to Hawaii. So, you know, I could just go back and forth.
But you can't take the RV there, though, very easily.
You cannot. No, a bit harder.
Well, thanks so much for chatting with us today. Can you tell us where our listeners can find your website, your course, and the best ways to follow your locums journey online?
Yeah, Dr. Jacobs Health, drjacobshealth.com is my main website. The course is right there when you click on the tab, and you can read about it, see what the content's about, see if it's a good fit for you. And then the locum lady, if you want some entertainment, that's my Instagram and TikTok handle. I'm more present on Instagram than I am TikTok. And then all of those channels can be reached through my website.
Excellent. And we'll have them in our show notes as well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jacobs, for chatting with us today. It was very interesting, very insightful, and love what you're doing. Please keep it up.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You have been listening to Let's Locums, a podcast brought to you by SpecialtyLocums.com and hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer. SpecialtyLocums.com is a physician-run locum tenens company. We're dedicated to providing the best locum tenens opportunities for our amazing healthcare providers. Join us every week as we dive deep into the world of locum tenens. Time stands still.